report. Now we're back on. You see, the shame of it is, I mean, Sarah and her husband are dying for me to have dinner with them almost every night of the week.
Absolutely.
But because I work here, I can't. And we only get to catch up about once every 2 years in the commercial breaks. And we're going through all the people who are really, really jerkolas. And the road to television history is paved with jerk. Have you? Let's not get going on.
Well, it's just sad. I'll just to recap, so our viewers don't, or our listeners don't feel left out, and that's that it is true that perception is everything.
Sure it is.
And the way you perceive something that happens to you and the way you take it in and deal with it, you know, it could either be a... Boy, this thing echoes when you hit it, doesn't it?
You bet.
You know, it could either be a growing experience, it could be a chance to grow. What a concept.
Yeah.
A chance to grow.
What
somebody
a concept.
Hit me in the face, well... Why did they do that? Maybe I deserved it.
Yeah.
And get on.
Yeah, we're talking
instead
about...
Instead of harboring this grudge for this person for the rest of your life.
We're talking about people we know and these people who've had a childhood experience or something, and all of a sudden their entire life becomes focused upon something that happened 30 years ago and they can't get past it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say to these people, get on with your life, for God's sake, and stop being mean to people because of it.
Isn't that something that Katharine Hepburn said to Jane Fonda in on Golden Pond? Remember that wonderful scene?
Yeah.
Where she said, hey, all right, it's over.
It's over.
Let's go on.
Let's move forward.
Yeah.
What a concept.
Let's not ruin what few days, and who knows how many days we have left in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Let's use what we've got left.
Yeah.
Let's throw that away, too.
Let's get on with it. Right?
All right. Now that we've taken care of that business.
Here is Wilnetta in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Wilnetta.
How are you?
We're pretty good.
Fine.
Great. I'm a first-time caller, so I guess I'm a little nervous.
Hi, Wilnetta.
Don't be. You're among friends here.
It's just us kids.
Oh, great. Well, speaking of kids, I just wanted to comment on an earlier conversation I'd heard in the hour about the hormones you had discovered by reading those books about boys.
My gosh.
Well, I think... You know, as we all agree that it's really hard to be a parent. It's one of the most difficult jobs in the world, let alone from a woman's point of view, understanding the teenagers and their hormones, and then your husband's hormones on top of that, and anybody else you work with.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's PMS, and then there's menopause, and then there's all that stuff we have, too.
But just, I guess, keeping open the lines of communications and... letting the kids talk and you listen and trying to understand what they're talking about. I think that's the hardest for parents, just trying to understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, it really is. But boy, can it be a wonderful learning experience when it happens.
Yes, it sure can. Then when you see them grow up and become full, whole human beings that do something gratifying in the world. And
how old are your kids?
They're 27 and 26.
My gosh, Wilnetta, you survived.
Oh, I did?
Now
they're good citizens, they're taking care of themselves, and they're happy?
Yeah, they seem to be. Well, for the most part,
Now, they don't live in the house still, do they?
No.
Good.
No, they're grown. Mm. All my kids are grown and gone.
All right, Wilnetta, I'm glad you called. Thanks, ma'am.
Thanks for your
time. Thank you.
Bye
now. Are these calls that I see here not to be used? These are not good calls on line one and line three, Lisa? Not, okay, well then take them off the line. There's no sense tying up good lines here with people with calls that we aren't going to use. Stupid. Now, of course, they heard that on the phone. They'll call back and snarl at Lisa, who's in the exactly.
Poor Lisa.
You know, you said you brought the books home, What's Happening to Your Body for Boys, for Girls, right?
Uh-huh.
Where is the one about the girls? Like, would you give that to your son to read at 13?
Well, you know, I had to hesitate.
I mean, guys really want to know.
They do.
Yeah.
Isn't it interesting, though, is that when I was growing up, I didn't get any information about boys at all. Nothing. Zip. Nothing.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that in my day, boys were similarly uneducated.
Oh, yeah.
And so why it's still so fascinating, maybe.
Can I tell you, kid? We had a class in college called Christian Marriage, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, This is all this stuff about, and I'm not putting it down, but it's all so Pollyanna-ish, and it's all so nice, and all so sweet, and all so good. They never mention the knockdown dragout at 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, they never talk about it. It's, you know, the sacraments, and God loves you, and all this, which is fine.
Uh-huh.
Now, towards the end of the course comes the doctor's going to come in, and he's going to show you what women look like. And in my day, I'm a child of the 50s, Sarah Purcell.
Mm-hmm.
The only way I ever knew was Playboy magazine. That's how we found out. Because in Milwaukee, in the Catholic schools, let me tell you something, you couldn't catch a cold. It was so safe. This guy comes into the classroom and draws a chalk drawing of a woman in the most embryonic and unattractive way you can imagine. And proceeds to talk, and I thought, this is the biggest.
This is it?
Yeah, this is all we, yeah.
And see, what you should have done is taken the art courses.
Yeah.
I once walked in on an art course where they're doing painting and drawing and whatever, and walked in looking for a teacher or somebody, turned around and practically had my face in some poor person's private parts,
really?
And I about fell over and
yeah.
died.
Yeah, well, that's the normal reaction I hear.
See, I'm still working on puberty.
Yeah, and in my experience, that's been the normal reaction. Almost fall over, yeah.
Oh,
so anyway, you wouldn't want your 13-year-old to read...
Well, the nice thing about these books is that they did have a part in there where explained pretty well about mm-hmm. girls. And I did read it because I was interested to know, all right, what are they telling boys about girls, you know? So
yeah,
I did
yeah.
read that part in the boys, and I thought they did a pretty good job of it.
Yeah.
There was stuff in there I didn't know about girls. I'm telling you.
No kidding.
No kidding. I got relatively little education. In fact, a friend of mine told me to get a book called, I can't remember the name of it. It's a basic primer for women about women's bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, there's everything in there. You can look up just about everything, and it will give you an answer.
Yeah, yeah.
And
toes, teeth, hair, and all that other.
And all, where all the different arenas parts and arenas and points and
yeah,
all that
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Plugs and points,
yeah.
whatever they call it.
We are with Sarah Purcell in Los Angeles. Sarah's one of the stars.
This interview has taken a turn, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. Well, they usually do when we're here. You and I have a way of going down this road. It's a wonder they let us do it once every 2 years. We're with Sarah Purcell from The Home Show on the air on ABC's every morning, Monday through Friday, from 11 till 12:30. Like, when it's over, are you exhausted?
It takes a little bit to wind down.
Yeah, yeah. Gary is high-powered. We'll be right back after these messages. We are back with Sarah Purcell from The Home Show. You know, I really don't have anything else to ask you, and I don't have anybody else on the phone who wants to talk to us. Is there anything you'd like to know?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, I'm just thrilled to be doing the show.
Surviving, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but also, you know, like you're saying, how much you're enjoying what you do.
I love it.
It doesn't matter whether you get paid. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
I feel the same way. It's really a nice way to be able to
How long have you been in broadcasting? How long ago did you start?
I'm embarrassed to tell you. We just went to New York to celebrate Regis's 30th year in broadcasting, but my 20th year is coming up. 20 years, I think,
now
in 93.
Why would he celebrate 30? Johnny Carson is celebrating 30 years, not Regis Philbin. Doesn't he get it? You know, this is Johnny's time, not his. It's so right. But you went back to New York, huh?
Yeah, I went back to New York. But I can't believe also, I mean, he's so much older than I am.
Who, Reg?
And he's only 30 years of broadcasting. I'm 20.
I know, I'm 35. No,
he must have started late.
When did I start? 1955.
That was a nasty thing to say.
No. 37 years this year, me in broadcasting. 37. It's time to get out.
No, it's not.
Oh, yeah.
You love it too much.
I do love it, but there's a lot of other things I love in my life. Anyway, kids.
Like what?
My granddaughter I love a great deal.
Great.
Yeah. I love my little place up north a great deal.
Yeah.
And I like not working a great deal. But see, I'm not working. I come here at night for 3 hours, keeps me off the street,
uh-huh.
and pays my rent. What a lucky guy I am.
Oh,
huh?
There's the parting music.
Listen, kid. Yeah, yeah. And here's the parting gift. You're a funny lady, Sarah
Purcell.
Oh, thanks. It's a pleasure to know you.
A pleasure to know you, too.
Hope to see you soon.
Thanks.
Sarah Purcell, well, matter of fact, you can see her tomorrow morning, 11 o'clock Eastern Time on the Home Show on ABC TV with our pal Gary Collins. I'm T.S. This is the Thursday Night Radio Show out of Southern California. And on many of these same stations, we're coming right back. Everybody, welcome back, folks. T.S. with you, Tom Snyder, here on the radio show's Telephone Connection. It's late on Thursday, almost Friday now, the 21st of May, 1991. This is the hour of you and T.S. all alone on the telephones. The toll-free exchange is open to you here at 800-756-0852. That is 800-756-0852. All of this from Los Angeles, California. You know, I was just thinking here about making a joke about L.A., you know, sunny Southern California, palm trees, riots. Jeez. I remember that simpler time when California was the thing we all looked at when the Rose Bowl came on television New Year's Day. You see the Rose Bowl and the mountains covered with snow and the blue sky and the marching bands from USC and Ohio State or whatever the schools were in the Rose Bowl. And that January, everybody would think, maybe we should all move to California. Boy, what a different time we live in now. Not very many people are thinking about moving to California. I said to a friend of mine the other day, I was talking with Jerry West from the Lakers, and we were talking about traffic. Is it me, or do we spend an inordinate amount of time in this city waiting at red lights? This is a tough, tough town to get around in. Man, I could move faster in New York than I can move in Los Angeles, and it's everywhere. It's in Beverly Hills, it's in South Central, it's in Hollywood, it's downtown, it's the Valley, Santa Monica, Pasadena, wherever you go, there's just millions and millions of people going with you. Weird. Anyway, I was just thinking, I was talking with Sarah Purcell, who was one of our guests tonight, and if your station repeats the programming, I urge you to listen to Sarah Purcell. I have been in love with her for as long as I can remember, when she was on television with Regis Philbin on Channel 7, in Los Angeles at 9 o'clock in the morning. She's a terrific broadcaster. She has a great sense of humor. She's a great laugh. She's a good-looking lady. And she's terrific on the air. I've always admired her work. So anyway, we were talking about The Tonight Show. That's what a lot of people in this industry are talking about this week. Tonight, Johnny Carson has done his last interviews on The Tonight Show. Bette Midler and Robin Williams are on tonight. Can't wait to go home and watch this tonight. He was on last night with Richard Harris. Remember Richard Harris, Bob and Lisa? He was here. He was our first guest after we finished our coverage of the war in the Persian Gulf a year ago, January and February. Remember how glad we were to see him? We had been doing the war for five or six nights, and Richard Harris came in here talking about the movie for which he received the Academy Award nomination a year and some months ago. I forget that. Yeah, The Field. Thanks, Bob. That's exactly right. And he was so charming and so terrific. He was on with Carson last night, and this guy was brilliant. I mean, he was so funny. He told great stories, and I'm just going to repeat one. And I can't do it as well as he, but you will just love this story. Carson was brilliant last night. He was talking about all the shows that are leaving NBC. He said, you know, The Cosby Show said farewell, Night Court said farewell, The Golden Girls said farewell. We're saying farewell. He said, and very soon now, the audience may be saying farewell. Funny line, you know. And, you know, he's been getting shots on Saturday Night Live from Dana Carvey and Phil Hartman, you know, where they play Johnny and Ed and they do all kinds of stupid stuff. It's very, very funny. But I guess it gets under Carson's skin. I guess, you know, he doesn't like it. And he said, next year, he says, they're going to try a whole new thing at NBC. They're going to do Saturday Night Live as a comedy show. And it took the audience about 1 second to get it, and then the place absolutely broke up. And Carson said, those who give also get. You know, he was very, very good. Anyway, this Fast story by Richard Harris, one of our most gifted actors, he had a great line last night talking about Peter O'Toole. He said, there was a time in our lives when Peter O'Toole and I, 80% of our body weight was vodka and tonic, which is a pretty funny line. Harris was doing a production of Macbeth in the West End, and he told of how some of the British actors felt that he, as an Irish actor, wasn't quite up to snuff, and he said there was one particular guy who was playing the role of the king in Macbeth, he said, who really made my life a living hell when we were in rehearsal. And he said it was about 3 months of torture. This man was disdainful of me, he was rude to me, he was disrespectful to me. And he said, I vowed to get even with him once the show was before audiences on opening night. So Harris is playing the role of the surgeon, the physician, rather, in Macbeth. And the other British actor is playing, the British actor is playing the role of the king. And there is a moment in Macbeth when the king inquires of the doctor, how is the queen? And the doctor is supposed to say, my lord, I'm sorry to report the queen is dead. After which the king goes on to one of the great, great speeches in all of Shakespeare about tomorrow on tomorrow on tomorrow. I don't have the whole thing here as Harris did, but it's the great speech given after the passing of the queen that sets up the entire climax of this particular moment in Macbeth. So Harris says, we arrive at this moment in the play, and the king says to me, and how is the queen? And he said, I looked at him and I said, oh, the queen, she's fine. She's never been better. Oh, the queen is feeling great. She'll be down for dinner in just a few minutes. He says, and as I'm saying this, I'm walking off the stage because I know that all hell is going to break loose here. And all the audience can hear is me hollering for a taxi as I walk out the stage door of the theater. And, of course, now the fellow who's playing the king, what's he going to do? I mean, he can't make the speech. The setup line hasn't been there, and I guess it brought the house down. Anyway, he told stories like this with Carson last night. And it was one of Johnny's better moments in 30 years. What a delightful conversation he had with Richard Harris, as we did the night he was here. What a special man he is. I hope we can have him back. We are at 800-756-0852. I'm Tom Snyder. This is the radio show's Telephone Connection, and we'll be right back. Okay, we are back. This weekend, the production staff is going down to Disneyland. Well, they're going to Anaheim, actually, for the ABA, the American Booksellers Association Convention. We meet a lot of authors there. Well, we don't. The staff does. Paula, Lisa, and Debbie. They go down there, and they meet the authors. They meet the publishers. They set up the schedule for the year, put our bid in for important guests, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. For example, Norman Schwarzkopf has a book coming out in 1993, and that representation will be there. And it may well be that we put in our bid for Storm and Norman now and set up a date for him to come in and plug the book next year. So it's business. However, because it is at Anaheim, the staff feels a necessity to go to Disneyland. They'll probably go to Small World and all that stuff down there, okay? So Lisa just said to me, she said, would you like to go to Disneyland with us this weekend? I said, not. Can you imagine Memorial Day weekend at Disneyland? I have not been to Disneyland since 1973. I went down there then with my daughter. David Horowitz went down there. You know, the guy from TV, Fight Back with David. Horowitz and I went down there with our then wives and our daughters to go to Disneyland. And we played it smart. We went down on Friday night and took rooms at the Disneyland Hotel and then took the monorail into the park at the opening hour, whatever time the park opens, 9 o'clock. So there weren't a lot of lines there. However, Horowitz and I made the mistake the night before of consuming too much brandy in the Disneyland Hotel bar. So at 10 o'clock in the morning, we are both nursing enormous hangovers. We could have taken these hangovers to the Olympic Games and won every gold medal they ever gave for hangover, okay? We are on the spinning teacups with our daughters with hangovers. And, of course, the kids are making these cups, and I'm looking at Horowitz. He's turning green, and I'm turning green. I mean, we went to the men's room and puked when it was all, oh, my God, it was just awful. It was just awful. And then it was after that, na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Oh, you wanted to strangle these kids. Jeez, oh, my God, do I want to go to Disneyland? Well, I mean, I would not have a hangover now because I don't do that stuff anymore, but, man, that was tough duty. That was really tough duty. The spinning teacups, please spare me. In Los Angeles, the chief engineer of tonight's radio show is Bob DePriest. The producers, Lisa Earst-Palmer, is on the phones tonight. Her dad's getting better, right? Dad's fine. That's good. He's up and around, walking again. That's good. The other producers are long gone, home with their kids. Paula Schuster and Debbie Alpert are home. In New York, we have Beaumont Small and Dennis Meehan at the controls tonight. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, here and there, and thanks to the board ops, the boys and girls at all the stations across North America, for your help in the production and presentation of the Thursday Night Radio Show. On the line with AC in Danbury, Connecticut. Hello.
Yes, sir, Tom. How are we doing tonight?
Doing fine, AC.
I'm calling about, the other night, I just want to tell you, the other night you were talking about a lady, about her kid was being, going to another school there in the ghetto or something like that.
The kid was being bused an hour each way every day to go to a school in a different neighborhood.
But the point you made about that was, you were definitely, you said in the end, do I got it, but you definitely made your point. It was a good point, too.
Thanks, AC, appreciate it.
Tonight I'm calling about Johnny Carson's show, and he's definitely class act.
The classiest.
But there's a little controversy right now between Arsenio and Jay Leno. And Arsenio's saying that Jay Leno didn't earn his job there. I just wanted to get your opinion. Do you think he earned his job there?
Are you kidding me? Jay Leno, if you remember, has traveled more miles than any other comedian in the history of the business. The man has been on the road for 320 nights a year.
I agree.
Going to clubs in every part of this country, appearing on countless television programs, doing countless personal appearances. I mean, if anybody has earned the position of Tonight Show host, his name is Jay Leno. And I don't know if you watched Leno with Bob Costas last night. Leno was on with Costas talking about this very thing, and he was the picture of class. And if you notice, Leno has made absolutely no comment about this, because as he says, what am I going to say?
There's nothing to say.
No. I mean, as Leno said last night, I can't figure this out. It turns out Arsenio Hall called Jay Leno when Arsenio was getting his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame and said, hey, would you come down? My mother would love to meet you. And Leno went down there. He met Hall's mother. And all of a sudden, Arsenio comes out with this crack. I'm gonna kick him in the backside.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And as Leno said, there was a way to do that would have been funny. We could have had a little feud a la Fred Allen.
Yeah, back and forth, and both of them would get ratings out of it.
Exactly.
You know how us people are.
Exactly. No, it's too bad. It's too bad.
Okay, Tom, I'd like to say one more thing. Your ladies on the phone are a class act and
thanks.
Top shelf.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Have a good weekend.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. Ted, Vancouver, Washington. Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Ted.
Hey, I concur with that last statement about the operators. Okay, CBS Evening News, Dan Rather, brought out the JFK thing again. The counsel for the Warren Commissioner, David Bellin, and Dr. George Lundberg of the AMA have brought the two doctors that did the autopsy on the president, Dr. James Hunes and Dr. Thornton Boswell, saying that that the president was only shot twice from the rear, and that all their autopsies are straight and narrow, go along with the Warren Commission, and it's going to put this whole JFK thing to rest. And they talked to Oliver Stone, and he was miffed about it. And I was just wondering if you've heard about this.
No, I haven't. I didn't watch the Dan Rather News tonight, so this is the first I've heard.
All right, well, I just thought I'd bring that to your attention. And one more thing. You have The War Years by Edward R. Murrow. You ever heard of this?
I have a book given to me by Fred Friendly. I don't know if its title is The War Years, but they're all the commentaries, or most of the commentaries, that Murrow made from London for CBS during the war.
And they're in print form or record?
This is in print.
Okay, I have the original albums that were released.
Wow.
Two, and they're very thick albums.
I'm sure they are.
And I'm going to make some tapes of this, and you've been a good friend, and take care, buddy.
Okay, thanks, Ted. Bye-bye. Does that mean he's going to send them in, or we don't know? We will continue with more of you along the toll-free highway. Tomorrow night here we have a preview of consumer electronics, all the goodies we can buy this coming summer, with Andy Parr, a consumer electronics expert and columnist. And then tomorrow night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, Branford Marsalis, composer, musician, and musical director of The Tonight Show with Jay Leno will give us a preview of what will be happening on NBC Late Night after Johnny Carson is gone. We'll be right back after station identification. All right, Joseph in Fort Bragg, California. Hello. Hi.
Hey, I got something to talk about. I would have talked about it before, but I couldn't get through, and it's about this racism thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem I have with it is that the other day on the talk show at the station where I work at, somebody mentioned we need to sit down at the bargaining table with the blacks and with the Mexicans, and, you know, they just started naming off some, a few different, you know, nationalities, I guess. And they said we need to take them down the table, on the bargaining table, and explain this racism thing, you know, and work it out with them. And I thought, well, that's kind of funny, because let's say, you know, I'm 19, let's say I have a young black friend of mine, we go out for pizza. We're eating from the same table, you know, we're like brothers that way.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think of each other as black or white. We never will, you know, in that sense. But they want to, you know, I hear so many people want to just put it down on the table. You know, like, we got to discuss this problem with them. And I thought, well, if you have to discuss it, then you're creating a problem.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
But you see, you're fortunate because you and your friend have a relationship based upon mutuality of respect and trust and friendship. You don't have to discuss anything.
Mm-hmm.
But there are blacks and whites living in urban urban areas in America who don't have what you and your buddy have.
Yeah.
And they haven't been talking to each other, and they haven't been exchanging. I'm sure you and your friend have talked about the riots. You've talked about the stupidity of racism at one point or another in your friendship. There's a lot of people that haven't done that.
Yeah, I understand that.
And there's a lot of hostility that's built up between people that needs to be ventilated in some way, and that's why they talk about people getting together and negotiating their differences.
Yeah, but as for negotiating differences, see, if we didn't have any differences, we'd be happy. We'd never have to
work. Well, I understand, but you see, we do have differences, and
yeah.
we got to clear the air. Got to clear the air. Joseph, yeah. I'm glad you called. Thanks a million. Here's Robert in Tacoma, Washington. Hello.
Yo, Tom.
Yo, Robert.
Sorry, I must have dozed off there for a second. Listen, I've...
Probably you took a couple of... a few hours ago, and there's no need for you to listen to the radio.
I think it was that gold band ointment or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, when the itching and the burning gets so bad, you got to do something.
Keeps me awake.
Yeah.
Listen, I've been getting very concerned about all the discussion of Johnny Carson on your show. I mean, I know I'm probably missing something here, but, no, the sun doesn't rise or set on Johnny Carson's show, but maybe it does set and rise somewhere in the world, but, you know, it's awfully late, and I've missed it for... comfortably for probably 18 years out
mm-hmm.
of how many. And I'm sure there's a lot of people in the country that, you know, have set their watches by the show, but I can remember just a short time ago you were talking about possibly canceling your show, and we were very distressed, you know, that you might cancel your show on the last night of Johnny Carson's show.
We are not canceling our show on the last night of the Carson show. Hang on a second here, Robert. I want to talk to you for a minute. Hold on. Back with Robert, then on the Dan Quayle call is in, and we'll be getting to that right after station identification. You're listening to Service 60 WICC. Okay, we are back. You know, Robert, one thing you said that caught my ear, and you're right, there's a lot of people in this country who have never seen The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Well, I'm not one of them.
No, I know that, you know. But they did a survey in California, for example. At 11 o'clock at night, 84% of the people who live in the state of California have gone to bed.
A lot more people down there have televisions this week, though. After the riot.
Oh, stop.
Sorry, Tom. Give me some airtime.
No, I did the joke the other night. Why did George Bush come 3 days late? Because he wanted to make sure everybody had a television set, right?
Well, Tom, you know where I'm trying to go with this thing.
Robert, I have no idea where you're trying to go with this.
I'm
but,
sure you don't.
But I'm going to listen to you. Go ahead.
No, I mean, you can take the floor because you're the trained expert here. But I'm really seriously concerned about our country being, you know, obsessed with television.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think you probably share this somewhat, but over the last few weeks I've become concerned that maybe you too are obsessed with television. But from the standpoint of, you know, thinking people and what they do, you know, I feel like, you know, talk radio educational programs on radio and even educational television, you know, are a more acceptable form of entertainment than, say, sitcoms.
Oh, I agree with you 100%.
And I think we're living now in a society that, you know, has difficulty telling the difference between real life and sitcom.
You know what television is? Television is an easy way out for a lot of people. It's easy entertainment. You know, they finish dinner, they belch, they sit down in front of the television set, and they don't have to think for the rest of the night. They don't have to make any effort. It's easy entertainment, especially sitcom entertainment. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to watch some of this stuff on sitcom entertainment.
You know, though, I think that maybe what you're saying does tell me. I mean, one thing I can see in that is that I think the average working man in America deserves that. But, you know, that he should have some time. He comes home from work, or the average working woman, I should say, as well. And they have this time, and they should be able to spend it in a way that maybe they don't have to exert their mind or their brain or whatever.
Oh, I understand
and that.
That
they can relax.
But,
and I think that's a good thing, and I don't want people to misunderstand me. But
right.
I do belong to a group now that has really, I mean, our motto is sitcoms are dangerous to your health. And, you know, this may not seem serious on the front end, but if you look through it a little bit, I mean, come to the realization, this week, Murphy Brown has become a major political platform for our vice president.
Yep.
Now, what are we doing here, Tom? I mean, society has a difficult time telling the difference if Murphy Brown is having a baby or not having a baby. What are they doing now, you know, with the vice president bringing it up, you know, on national news? You know, we live in a... I kind of decided that the television set was going down the drain when, you know, I realized Laverne and Shirley had been number one for like 7 or 8 years. And I just was concerned that, you know, at that time, that television was not bringing us the information we needed to know. But as a source of entertainment, I can definitely see how it functions.
Well, I don't find most of it very entertaining, I must tell you. The only television I watch is when I get home at night, I watch the news, and I watch Carson or Koppel or Dennis Miller. I watch David Letterman. I watch Bob Costas. And that's all I watch.
Well, you know, that's great that we have the source of news. But on the other hand, I mean, our recent experience, 18 seconds of video highlights made us all experts over and above 12 honest men who spent countless hours of time and applied attention, you know, reviewing the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I have heard since the very beginning of this trial, of that trial, that, you know, these guys have obviously used too much force. And I think a person like me or like you or anybody else, we see that video. I mean, honest, they've got to stop. You know they're going to stop, but they never did. And I think it's very easy, it's very obvious to us as we look at that video that too much force was used. But, you know, there's more things to it. I can remember, you know, the Exxon Valdez.
Yep.
Remember, I mean, it was like...
Everywhere.
The guy is, the skipper is guilty, he's a drunk, he's a lush, he's ruined millions of dollars of natural resources, and, you know, he should go to... you know, whatever, prison for the rest of his life.
No, he should be hanged by his thumbs.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. I think he was burned in effigy by Greenpeace or something.
Anyway, listen, Robert, I got to move on here, but okay. I know what you're saying. I appreciate the call, and I hope you'll join us again.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot.
Okay, good night, Robert. Here is Scott in Houston, Texas. Hello.
Okay, fine. And I thank you very kindly, Tom, for letting me talk.
Go ahead, Scott.
And I wanted to talk also about what the Vice President was mentioning here about family values and so forth, and I think he missed the main point here, and that is a two-parent family is necessary for a child to grow up with ideas, role models, and so forth, about exactly how to operate and what to expect from the opposite sex. You know what I'm talking about?
I have no idea.
For example, I knew this gal who had been raised by an engineer father who had carried her all over the country, building bridges and so forth. She'd been raised essentially like a tomboy.
Mm-hmm.
And she was never able to accept her name, which was Anita. She always wanted to be called Sandy, an ambiguous name. And she was only happy as a circus roustabout and game operator and things like that, a kind of an ambiguous job
mm-hmm.
where she didn't have a regular family or a regular, you know, female responsibility.
Yeah.
You have to show the kid how to behave and what to expect from the opposite side. And that's what the single parent families don't do. And that's what Quayle and the rest of them really aren't mentioning. Is that a pretty good point?
That's a very good point. As a matter of fact, you know, I tend to, I said this last night, I think the message that we send out here to young people who are not sophisticated, who view Murphy Brown as a great role model when she says, I don't need to get married, I can have the baby all by myself, we're saying, hey, wait a second, we can do the same. Young women saying, you know, we can do this too. On the other side of the coin, we have all these families living in South Central Los Angeles where there is no man. We have heard a number of sociologists in the last year say the problem that young black males have is they don't have any positive male identification because their fathers have been absent. And we have to correct that because it's causing great detriments to young black men in America. Well, I mean, geez, if we're saying that on the one hand and then sending out a television program to young women that's saying, you know, you don't need a man to have a baby, you can do it all by yourself, I think we're sending out a mixed message. That's all I'm saying. However, having said that, last night here in talking about this, I did the replay of the Dan Quayle speech where he talked about a mine, this one right here.
Waste it is to lose one's mind, or not to have a mind is being very wasteful.
Yeah. Well, how do you say that again? What was that?
Waste it is to lose one's mind, or not to have a mind is being very wasteful.
Right. Now, that was a cheap shot last night when I did it. Tonight, I was just, you know, pointing out what I did. However, I do deserve 6 lashes for that. Bob, get out the whip. Oh! Oh! Oh, can't take anymore. Okay, no more Quayle. Yeah. We so stupid. But anyway, stupidity's a part of life. We'll be right back with more of your phone calls, your comments and questions after these messages from our radio stations. Okay, back we go to Gary in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm about to bring us back to Johnny Carson again.
That's okay.
His retiring made me start thinking about a couple of the broadcasters he left in his wake, and I was wondering if you happen to know whatever became of them. The first guy was Woody Woodbury, who replaced him on Who Do You Trust?
No, didn't he replace Woody Woodbury?
No, I think Woody...
Oh, you know, you're right. Carson went to The Tonight Show, and Woody Woodbury did Who Do You Trust. You're
right. Yeah.
I have no idea what happened to him.
Okay, and the other guy was the host of the first late-night competition that ABC threw against Carson.
Les Crane.
Right. And his shotgun mic.
That's out of San Francisco. I have no idea where Les Crane is today. I assume he's still in Northern California, but I don't know.
Okay. Both those guys sort of vanished without a trace from TV, it seems.
Mm-hmm. Well, sooner or later, we all vanish without a trace, you know.
I guess.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. Can't help you, Gary. Sorry.
Okay. Maybe some of your listeners might know.
Stay tuned.
Okay. Thanks.
By Ann, Dallas, Texas. Hello. Hello, Ann. How'd you like the food? That bad, huh? Cliff in Linwood, Washington. Hello.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Cliff.
Yeah, I've got I don't know how much people have been talking about the JFK theories recently, but there's a book out that I've heard surprisingly little about called Mortal Error, and it pretty much disputes a lot of the other books talking about the conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
It does say that there was a second gunman, and it was an accident, the fatal shot. I don't know if you've heard of the book or not.
No, I have not. How was it accidental?
Apparently one of the Secret Service agents, in responding to the rifle fire from the... I don't want to give away the book, but one of the Secret Service agents accidentally fired his rifle.
What, that Kennedy was hit by friendly fire?
Yes.
Well, that's a new one. I haven't heard that one.
I know. I bought the book kind of... mostly because it was on discount at my local store.
Seemed like a bargain, right.
I was very skeptical. I've bought a couple other ones trying to get details on what people think. And this one is surprisingly believable, and I can't really dispute it anywhere. The guy goes through every detail. Apparently he wanted to prove for himself that the Warren Commission knew what they were talking about, and he couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
He found...
Very interesting. Very interesting.
Uh-huh.
All right, Cliff, I appreciate the information. Thanks.
Yeah, I'd recommend the book.
Okay, Mortal Error.
Yeah, it's by St. Martin's Press.
Okay, take a look. Thanks, Cliff. Debbie in Minneapolis. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'd like to say that I heard Sarah commenting on stay-home mothers.
Yes.
And I stay home with my 2 boys every day. And we just thought that there's no way we're going to put our kids in daycare.
Mm-hmm.
See, everything that's going on in daycare is now. So I stay home with my children, and I love it. And the only problem it causes is that I feel like I have to get out of the house, so it causes a problem at night for me to get out and do my activities. And also, I was...
And do you do that? Do you go out at night and take care of your activities?
I bowl one night a week. I play softball two nights a week, and I go to bingo one night a week.
That's very good. And your husband stays home and takes care for you?
Yep.
That's terrific. You're a very fortunate woman.
We get some complaints on it, but I'm able to do it.
Who complains?
My husband.
Oh, well, tell him to sit down.
He lives with it. But also, I was listening last Thursday when you had Dionne Warwick on,
mm-hmm.
and she was commenting on how you only see black people on, like, every 7 commercials.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I came home that night, and she said for you to check it out, and I know you said you would.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. First commercial I seen had a black person on.
Mm-hmm.
The next 3 I seen had a black person on.
Mm-hmm.
This is here in Minneapolis. Some of them are local commercials.
Of course.
But I had about every 3 had a black person on. The farthest I went without a colored person was 7, and I changed channels in that area.
So, in other words, you did your own survey, and you felt that black Americans were represented well in commercials.
Yep. At least here in Minneapolis, they are.
Okay.
A lot of it was local commercials. And it was also late at night. I was going to try it again during the day, and I haven't gotten to it yet.
Well, I mean, listen, you got a lot going on out there. You got kids, you got bowling, softball, and bingo. I mean, we can't have you home watching television for commercials. So,
yep.
No. How do you do at bingo? Any good?
Not lately. I go in streaks.
What's the most you can win?
Where I go, 1,000.
Wow.
I haven't won that yet. My most is 500.
It's not bad.
No.
Not bad. Debbie, I'm glad you called. Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. Annette Boca Raton, hello.
Hi, Tom. How are you this evening?
I'm fine, Annette. Thanks for calling.
Tom, I wanted to address this Murphy Brown issue, also in conjunction with abortion.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that this administration is not in touch with reality. You know, Vice President Quayle had something to say about single motherhood. And what he didn't say anything about is all of the women and men who have tried marriage, and it hasn't worked. And the deadbeat roles are 92% men. Women don't deadbeat on their children. And those are the stats. And if a woman chooses to have a child without having a father, and if she's a good mother and can provide for the child, that child might be better off. Are you there?
Yes, I can't argue with what you're saying. I have no argument whatsoever with what you're saying.
And, I mean, they just sit in their ivory towers. It's just unbelievable, these people. I wrote a letter to President Bush about a month ago addressing the abortion issue, and I had done some research and discovered that abortion was always legal until the early 1900s. And at the time it became illegal, in order to actually protect women from surgical procedures which were unsafe at the time. Well, I questioned in the letter that considering it wasn't an offense in secular law, when it became safe surgically, Why wasn't the court petitioned to just return the fundamental right to women? And the answer I got did not address on any level the question I asked.
Well,
just completely averted.
I mean, what would you expect? What would you expect?
Well, I would have expected something of an answer.
Well, by all polls, the White House is totally out of touch with the American feeling on abortion and women's reproductive rights. Every survey taken that I've read indicates that more people favor pro-choice,
mm-hmm.
than favor a return to the days when abortion was prescribed by law. Anyway, listen to that. I'm glad you called tonight. You make a very interesting and valid point, and I appreciate that. Thanks for calling us.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, bye-bye. Bob in Bakersfield, California. Hello.
Hi, it's Bob. First of all, I'd like to say that on a whole, I enjoy you because I think you're politer than a lot of the liberal people on radio. Also, I want to ask you, my wife's on listening with us. Can she comment too, or is that wrong?
No, that's okay. But I'll tell you what, let me do the break quickly.
Okay.
And have you got 2 phones so you don't have to pass the phone back and forth?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, okay. All right, okay. Be right back with the whole family there after these messages. Okay, we're back to Bob in Bakersfield. And who else is on the line, Bob?
My wife's name is Kay.
Hi, Kay.
Hi.
Okay, go ahead, folks.
Now, we both agree. I made the call because we have a daughter whose throat is hurting, and she was crying, and my wife was checking her temperature at the time. But we both agree there may be a time for abortion, you know, in rape or when they really know that the child won't live or certain. But when we use it as just, what do you call it?
Abortion is birth control.
Yeah. And and not only abortion, I don't see the issue as just abortion. It's ironic, you know, that you had the woman right before Kay and me. But Dan Quayle is criticized every time he opens his mouth, and I've never heard him say anything that offends me or offends my wife or offends... we think the main reason we had the riots recently was because the breakdown of family values. You couldn't go out and do that the way that we grew up. We're upset. I'm blind, and we're on low income, and we're really disappointed at the moment because my wife is trying to get a degree. I'm 50 and she's 46, and she wants to, you know, we need better earning power, and we're having a hard time finding the money so she can stay in school.
Mm-hmm.
But we wouldn't go out and burn down a store, and we wouldn't kill people to show our protest. I wish I knew how to protest, and we don't want the money even given to us. We just want to be able to borrow it and pay it back once she gets out of school.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's save some time for Kay because it's going...
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is just that, you know, there's a lot of women who want a right to totally have a say over their bodies and about abortion, about their children. And being a person who have had children of my own, and understand, I've come a long way in believing that women have been put down for a long time. And I believe in women's rights. I believe women have been treated unequally and unfairly for years. But a lot of it is because women have accepted it and perpetuated the problem themselves, and I see that. But at the same time, I really see a danger in swinging so far that family values or common sense and the morality in our nation, and I do not see that women fighting for these sorts of things have made the situation better. I feel for my own daughter and for myself, I don't want these things to happen. And, you know, for me, abortion would be wrong. For me to say for another woman, for it to be right, I would not condemn another woman. I would not let her not have that choice in certain situations. But
okay.
To say that it's right, just as a form of birth control, I cannot stand it. There's many, many, many women
okay.
like me.
Okay, all right, okay. Kay, Bob, time is gone. Thanks for calling. Appreciate you being with us. Show is over. Have to say goodnight. Say goodnight to him for us, Lisa. See if we can get Marty back tomorrow night. If he wants, we can do it tomorrow night. Thank you all for listening. Sweet dreams and sleep tight, America. Good night. I'm confused.